Of the House Education Interim Committee meeting, and Representative Close, how nice to see you. You're right on time. With that, we will proceed with our itinerary, and we're talking about the Secretary of State's audit of the Oregon Department of Education. So if you'd come up, we would be very pleased to hear from you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, member of the committee. For the record, I'm Chuck Ibner, and I'm Deputy Director of the Audit Division. What I would like to do for you today, with permission of the Chair, since there's a lot of information in this audit report, is to kind of give you a high-level overview of the things that were of concern to us. And if at any time you want to ask any additional questions, that's fine, or certainly there'll be time at the end to handle any questions you may have. The report you have before you, our special review of personnel, is one in a series of audits we are conducting of the Department of Education. These audits are conducted at the request of Mr. Bunn, Superintendent, and in response to some specific allegations we received, including the agency's use of school district employees to fill state positions. We did not include in our audit any of the allegations under review by the Government Standards and Practices Commission. As a service organization, the department's employment of human resources is critical in achieving its mission and is also one of the primary cost drivers. Our audit objectives involve determining if the methods used by the department to employ school district employees were appropriate, resulted in higher costs to the state, and were managed in a way to ensure compliance with state rules. The second major part of our audit objective looked at other personnel practices such as differential payments, paid leave, and direct appointments. The results from our review of the school district's hiring practices begin on page 2 of this report. If you'd like to turn to page 2, then I'd be happy to kind of go through there. Starting under the audit's results section and non-competitive filling of department positions, our concerns centered around the lack of competitive recruitment, the use of these employees as long-term solutions, the unique costs incurred, and the assignment of executive powers to non-state employees. Potentially, these practices could be costing the state more than filling the positions with state employees. We acknowledge, however, that without regular, open, competitive recruitment for the position, it is not possible to know if all or part of the $62,000 noted in the report is compensation above what would have been necessary to fill the positions. We also questioned the payment, $12,900 for commuting costs for two employees, which you see at the bottom of page 3. The first employee changed responsibilities during the period. The employee agreement originally had the official work site as Eugene. This should have been changed with a change in roles, in our view, and the responsibility should more actively reflect an official workstation in Salem. This change would have limited payment of the mileage traveled from Eugene to the Salem office. For the second employee, no official work site was designated in the contract. Based on our review, it appeared to us the employee was working in Salem most of the time, and hence, no travel reimbursement should have been paid. Finally, we noted instances where a non-state employee inappropriately had responsibilities for approving contracts and disbursing funds. It's important to note that employee now is a state employee. That practice is no longer happening. The section of the report starting on page 3 that deals with the department's state employee practices, which would be right in the middle there, second column, probably can be summarized a couple of ways. First, we identified personnel practices resulting in questioned payments totaling approximately $67,000. Those practices were in our review were the differential payments, the lead work payments to the Department of Education program specialists, some salary overpayment to an executive service employee, the awards program that was in place, and we also noted that we reviewed the direct appointments that were not adequately documented. The second thing that we can probably say that would characterize our findings in this area was a large share of the amount we questioned is simply questioned because there is no clear documented justification as to why these should be deviations from policy. Our review did note several differential payments that exceeded the approved duration or the maximum amount allowed. These exceptions accounted for the $3,800 in overpayments noted on page 3, which is up near the top of that next column. On page 4, we also identified an overpayment to an executive employee of the department, which is right in the middle of page 4, of $18,700. This was the result of a demotion where the salary was not reduced to match the new position. The top of the next column, we also questioned the awards program that granted paid leave for every 5 years of service, which was in direct contrast to the DAS policy that cites performance and not solely time of service as a basis for an awards program. It appeared to us that many of these deviations were the result of the department's interest in improving employee recruitment and retention. However, we felt that any variations from the state or department policy should be justifiable, documented completely, and approved by appropriate department managers. In the absence of any documentation and or compelling reason as to why these exceptions were made, we questioned the actions and the associated payments. Our main recommendation to the department in this area was to work with the Department of Justice and the Department of Administrative Services to review, question personnel actions, and payments to determine their appropriateness and to recover any amounts inappropriately paid. On page 5 of the report, we also include a section near the end that addresses our review of state phone usage by school district employees. We found that by and large, one employee accounted for the majority of the questionable long-distance phone calls, and the department has recouped much, if not all, of the costs associated with personal calls. We also note that the state policy and a government standards and practice advisory opinion are conflicted on this issue of allowability of repayment by employees for personal long-distance phone calls incurred. The Department of Administrative Services, you'll note in their response, is willing to work with the Government Standards and Practices Commission to remove any inconsistency. The department has expressed great concern over the areas we have brought to their attention and have shown a willingness to solve many of these problems. In fact, they have created and filled a human resources director position. They have also converted all of the job rotation non-state manager positions we reviewed to permanent state employees. We would also feel it's important to note that we were not questioning the quality or qualifications of the school district employees under review. That's the end of my formal presentation. Any questions would be welcome.
Okay, any questions?
Okay.
If not, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Stan, do you want to come up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am Stan Bunn, Superintendent of Public Instruction with offices at 255 Capitol Street. And with me, I have Mark Hunt, our Human Resources Director. And we are pleased to be here today and be able to share with you our comments on the quality work that the Secretary of State did on their audit. This hearing, I believe, comes as a result of a budget note suggesting that we would report to you. I wanted to indicate to you that there were three main reasons that I called for and asked for the audit. First, at the time, there were a number of newspaper articles that had raised questions about the leadership of the Superintendent of Public Instruction and his conduct and other members of the staff. I wanted to reassure the public about the quality of the work that was being done at the department, and I also wanted to determine whether we could learn of any improvements that should potentially be made as a result of audit work. We are pleased with the result of the audit. We believe that the Department of Education and the Secretary of State's office were able to work together to make a successful result that could be used. This audit not only suggests improvements and changes that can occur, but it suggests accomplishments that have already occurred there. I want to suggest to you, as a thing that might be a little helpful, a contrast between this audit and the articles you may have read in the newspaper in the last couple of days. This audit is factual, I think helpful and accurate, and I sort of characterize the difference between whether you prefer fiction or nonfiction when you review materials. I want to give a context for the audit work that occurred by suggesting to you that it is a part of a continuous improvement model at the Department of Education. And I want to go back for a beginning point to 1997. And even before that, I want to suggest this. In the 1980s, it was a period for the Department of Education, as for others, of cutbacks, reduction of resources, and requests for more work. And in that context, I think that Superintendent Paulus did an absolutely admirable job of using less resources more effectively. And in that process and that effort, one of the things that was instituted that I'll talk more about later were job rotations, and I'll talk about why they were so critical. In 1997, there was an audit done by the same Secretary of State's office that was highly critical, this is about 2 years before I took office, highly critical of many of the personnel processes at the Department of Education. Now, they are not, in my mind, in any way attributable to the Secretary, the Superintendent of Public Instruction at that time. They are, in fact, attributable to these kinds of things. That audit said the Department of Education needs to provide leadership, but has difficulty doing so to the level necessary because they don't pay their staff enough to compete with school districts and others in retaining the kind of staff they need. In a 3-year period in the curriculum office, there was a 65% turnover. It is hard to sustain quality work with that kind of turnover. There were suggestions in that audit saying you need to work on recruitment, retention, and paying staff the level that they need. We used that audit for a roadmap for our work in attempting to make personnel efforts substantially different. Now, I would just note that 8 of the 10 items that are cited in the audit were items that carried over from previous and earlier work in administrations. There's something that would have been helpful to us that didn't occur. By law, it's required that there be an audit in a change of leadership. For whatever reason, that did not occur between the Paulus and Bunn administration. And frankly, we would have loved to have had that as a benchmarking point in which some of these things could have been identified. But I would like to share with you what we have done since 1999, specifically in the personnel area. We created a task force around work with personnel and personnel efforts. We worked aggressively on recruitment and retention. We went to both the Department of Administrative Services and the legislature to successfully ask for more pay for specialists in order to do retention and recruitment. When the finances allowed, we moved to create a human resources director position, and Mr. Hunt with me today is that person. We created written policies and procedures around personnel, created a website area on human resource issues, created a training with our directors and mid-level leadership effort around hiring, created in our change of specialist categories career ladders within the Department of Education, and created a much broader hiring and posting process for hiring people to the department, including Monster.com, newspapers, and a series of other efforts. We're proud of the work that has gone on to create a stronger, sounder center for personnel efforts in the Department of Education. It has created, in my mind, the strongest team at that department that I could possibly operate with, both at the deputy level and throughout the organization, to create the kind of capacity that has allowed us to do the work that we do. I would like to take several areas of the audit and just show you the complex issues that are involved there. I mentioned to you that Superintendent Paulus had used the job rotation process to recruit people. I need to describe to you that often when we want to recruit a person who's a specialist in assessment or a specialist in a category of leadership, the only place that we have to successfully go for the expertise is to the school system. It is not available in other state agencies very often. The requirements are those that people have developed an expertise in the school districts. Now, here's what we face and what we look for. We find that the people that we most need and most desire are the senior personnel at the school districts. They have a deep commitment in addition to education to their families. They have retirement benefits, other benefits, medical benefits that do not match the state of Oregon's, and we can't compete with those often. And so those people indicate we're willing to come on a job rotation because we'd love to help the Department of Education create its capacity, but we cannot afford on behalf of our families to give up those packages. That is frankly why I believe that the former superintendent hired Nancy Heiligman on a contract with a school district as the most talented person literally we could get in the state of Oregon to deal with the $5 billion that go out to schools. One of the reasons we have repeated compliments about our work around that money is because Nancy does such a tremendous and outstanding job. Now, I believe that at that time, it was very likely that the superintendent was only able to recruit Nancy based on matching in a contract what the Eugene School District matched. Now, the question I have asked around that contract is, was it legally sufficient? And the answer from my standpoint is, yes, it was legally sufficient. However, when we became aware of the practice of paying for the mileage, we found other solutions to continue Nancy's work on that job rotation, made her a permanent employee, and discontinued that practice. But I want to suggest to you that the job rotation issue is as yet an uncompleted story. We have to answer over time the questions: will an attorney general's opinion establish that this can be done outright as it is or had been? We have, by the way, moved those executive people to state employment. But I want to suggest to you that we have now limited our capacity when they leave to hire new people with the same kind of opportunity that we had. So we will have to work with the attorney general, with DAS, and ultimately, if necessary, the legislature to foster, create, and develop the very best, fairest job rotation program. Because as we hire our associates, as we hire the highest level of management, it will be essential for us to continue to work with the school districts to draw those people. And I just want to suggest to you it's a complex area that has many aspects to it. But what we have done, in addition to recognizing the ongoing need for work with it, is move to comply with the concerns expressed by the Secretary of State's office, but view that as needing additional work. On the awards program, I want to just clarify that we gave, again, a practice that had been pre-existing to my administration. Persons who had been there 5 years got their choice between a coffee mug or a half a day off. The majority chose the coffee mug. Now, we can reinstitute that program so it's based on performance rather than longevity, but I wanted to give you some sense of the context of that issue. I think the Secretary of State has been extremely helpful to us in saying that as you look to rewarding people for multiple levels of work, you need to have a stronger documentation program of that. I think in the $67,000 they pointed out, that their suggestion that there be stronger documentation there is fully warranted. That's something we've learned in this process, and we'll do that and assure that that occurs. We have been able to take what the Secretary of State's office found, and some of that we had implemented changes on before they came in to do the audit. Others we have done changes mid-course, and others we're moving to do the enhancements at this time. And we feel that they have been helpful and beneficial in their work, and that it will allow us to be a stronger, more effective Department of Education. And so with that, I would like to answer, or we would like to answer, any questions you may have, any review.
Yeah, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I was reading this audit report yesterday, they said that these positions were filled at the high end of the pay scale without justification as to why in the file. Is that correct?
Well, I think, and I don't want to misspeak, that there was not adequate, I think the assertion was that there was not adequate documentation at times for that action. Now,
so what I'm saying is, does that mean then the reverse is true? If there was adequate documentation to justify those high salaries, would it then been okay to pay that person at the higher end of the pay scale? Is that what the audit is saying?
Well, I think yes and no, and I'll try to clarify that, and then the Secretary of State may want to comment further. I think at times they were saying there is not adequate documentation and the documentation needs to occur. I think at other times they were saying, even with documentation, in this particular case, we think you may have gone too far in the stretch of allowing that level of salary. And both of those have given us information that allows us to better structure the enhancements we do. One of the things I need to stress that has been a frustration for me is that the 1997 audit said, pay your people more, get going, get some leadership here. And the current audit says, we raise a question because you paid people at the top half of the salary level often. There is some need for us to have ongoing discussion of how those two fit together. But having said that, I think the things that they provided for us around, here's how you can do enhanced documentation, here's how you can assure that you comply, is excellent and helpful information.
Stan, you mentioned, of course, the job rotation system. Do other agencies have to do that, or do they do that?
Well, let me distinguish this. There is, under DAS policy, a job rotation program that is not this program. It would be better if we had two separate names for these. This is more like a United Way loaned executive, if you will, where the talent is there to help out. And I've not seen in other agencies, and Mark may be able to comment, the kind of unique need for this kind of program that exists in our partnership with the schools. Do you have a...
Mr. Chair, in my experience with state government, I've not seen the same kind of skill needs that the Department of Education has, and how deeply we rely on school districts for their talent. I can't draw up any examples that would parallel ours.
You're anticipating too that on the job rotation, that any, say, difficulties with it or inconsistencies about it can be probably solved by measures short of legislative action?
Well, I can't answer definitively at this point, but my hope is this, that in working with DAS and working with the Attorney General, that we would be able to resolve that short of the need for legislation. If not, we will propose to come to the legislature and ask for help with it.
Representative Devon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bunn, one of the things about the job rotation program that I would wonder about, and you've made an analogy to like a United Way type situation. Well, in a former life, I was dealing with a state agency a lot, not the Department of Education, but the Department of Land Conservation and Development. And in that former life, I advocated that they would do a better job if they would actually rotate some planners into the department that had actually seen what it was like at a local level to deal with some of these issues. Do you see some benefits of this job rotation in terms of actually getting people that have more recently actually been out in the field? Sometimes I see state agencies that have, you know, people originally came from the field, but they've been in the state agency for 15 or 20 years, and they've kind of forgotten what it was like at the local level to provide the services.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Devlin, I do. When you have a person at the Department of Education who was teaching last year, and they are working with school district personnel who are frustrated or excited about a program, and they know that person was in the classroom on the firing lines, it makes a tremendous difference to them in their response to the Department of Education.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to switch just a second here. I have two questions. You have about, I can't remember what it said, 456, 400 to 500 employees. How many are we talking about here that are on this rotational plan?
It varies, but we've had up to a dozen on job rotations. And
total.
Mm-hmm. So it's a very small number, but they often fill very critical spots in the effort. So it is a small number, but critical.
Representative, it seems to me, I may be wrong, but I read 328 employees.
No, there are about 460, but it depends on whether you include the schools for the blind and deaf, which are certainly a part of our effort, and we have contract people in addition.
Follow up, please.
Thank you, and I appreciate the mixed messages that you have gotten in regard to you need to get better employees, but you don't need to pay more. Maybe you should take them out of the state system. And it seems to be another almost contradiction, or at least a place for confusion, are the mixed messages and mixed direction on the usage of phones. It said specifically, if I read that correctly, that there definitely are two ways of addressing the reimbursement for the phones, one from DAS and one from Government Standards Practice Commission. How is that going to be addressed, or...
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Hobson, first on the issue of the mixed messages on pay, lack of pay, I want to say first very, very clearly that we view that the Secretary of State's office has been very helpful to us. I want to make that clear. And that to the degree they have been able to, I believe they have reconciled those two. The earlier audit was done by contract. It was done, DAS, the Legislature, Department of Education, Secretary of State were involved, and it was a contract process with a private firm that I candidly believe had a bit of a different perspective than the current audit process. We believe over time with conversation we can reconcile those two, and that'll work. I've recently become an expert on use of the telephones, your second question. I'll be very brief, but I just want to say this. I have contended from the beginning of those issues surrounding my superintendency and continue to assert that you cannot have two conflicting policies, as the Secretary of State found, and one agency charge a person under their policy while the other agency has found appropriate conduct under theirs. And I'm delighted to hear that the Department of Administrative Services intends to move forward, evidently with dialogue with Government Standards and Practices. I feel a tiny bit like, in this case, justice delayed is justice denied, but that's a personal bias I have.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for coming in, and we appreciate your comments. Would anyone like to, Chuck, would you like to come back up? Are you satisfied?
Looks like he's leaving.
Tootie, Representative Smith would like to ask you a question or more.
For the record, Chuck Kibner, Deputy Director, Office Division.
Thank you, Mr. Hibner. In answer to my question, the same question I posed to Superintendent Bunn, am I to assume then from your audit, if there was proper documentation as to why these positions were paid at the high end of the pay scale, would that then justify the high payment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, it was within the purview of the appointing authority to use the scale as would seem fit based on the qualifications of the interviewee, the candidate. Mm-hmm. Our point was that if you're going to make that exception, with there being guidance from Department of Administrative Services, that typically you should hire in the lower end of that scale, that if you were to vary that practice fairly regularly or even at all, that you should document why that particular individual had the sort of qualifications that would justify them being at the higher end of the scale.
Second question.
Follow-up.
When you talk about competitive hiring, it seems to me, it's been said here today, it's hard to find competitive people to fill some of these positions with the expertise that we demand from them. So how does competitive hiring go into the fact that maybe Nancy Heiligman was the best person for this job? Maybe there's only one or two people or three or four in the state that could do it. I cannot see a whole pool of people applying for her job.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I'm not sure I would disagree with you.
Okay.
In that if you were to open that position competitively, that you may only get one candidate and maybe the most qualified in the state. That would be great for us, I'm sure. Our concern was that in trying to evaluate whether the quote, job rotations or the contracts that were in place were necessary, was if it wasn't competitively bid, how would you know? If you put it out for bid and nobody applied and you had this particular individual where the only way to attract them was to develop this contract, which certainly we could understand, then that would certainly be a justification in our minds that that may be the way to bring the person into the department.
So it sounds to me like it's a matter of paperwork then?
If indeed you open the position and there were other applicants that were qualified that were not known, then you would be in the position of being able to evaluate whether this contract and this extra money on this contract were truly necessary. And it would also provide the opportunity for this individual to apply as a state employee and therefore become a part of the state system.
Thank you.
Mr. Hittner, you've heard Mr. Bunn speak rather glowingly of the audit, that it was very helpful to the Department of Education. What is your reaction to the department's reaction?
Mr. Chair, we were impressed with their concern, though we didn't always, it took may have taken a little time to really understand each other's perspective. I felt that we worked through those and were able to develop very solid recommendations that if implemented, and a lot of them have been, would be fruitful for the department. So I felt that the process worked. And though possibly uncomfortable at times, certainly professional on both sides, and we were able to come to agreement on a lot of the issues of concern to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, very good. Excellent. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. We appreciate your coming. Well, I think, committee, we have exhausted our itinerary. I've enjoyed the day. Nice seeing you again. And with that, we will adjourn.